Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebaud.
Yes, hello, welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by Jeff Rimebaud. Jeff, how you doing, mate?
I'm doing good, fellas. It's opening of training camps in the NFL, and we're into our season, so a lot of football being played now.
Yeah, and Jeff, we love this time of the year, and I want to get into training camp chat and a couple of stories that kind of head into the early preseason action. But why do you love this time of the year when all the teams are heading back into camp?
Well, I think there's a combination of reasons. Number one, if you're a fan, this is the time when optimism, really is at its peak. Even if your team wasn't good last year, there's always hope for this year and what you've done. It's time that you really get a chance to see the rookies that you've drafted, the free agents that you signed in the off season, and so it's a new year for everybody. And then for me personally as a coach, it's an opportunity to see who the guys, the kind of those unheralded guys that are going to step up. Veterans that have been hurt and, are going to make comebacks. And, you look around and you see what's the impact going to be of an Adrian Peterson. Mm. Who's going to be the next Cole Beasley, the guy that, comes out of nowhere to become a really fine player in the league. What's the impact of Doug Marrone and Tom Coughlin in Jacksonville? There are so many storylines, and every team has one. So it's a great time of year.
All right, so we're going to get to training camp in a few minutes. I want to just touch on a few bits of news first, and we'll take some questions from our listeners in our mailbag towards the end of the podcast. But Jeff, just following on from our conversations we had last week, Marty Herney was indeed named the interim general manager of the Carolina Panthers. He's wasted very little time in shaking things up. He's fired pro personnel director Mark Contz. What's your thoughts on Marty getting that job, and I wonder if they'll eventually take the interim tag away?
Well, it's interesting, this, I thought about this. If for the listeners who listened last week, we said, and I think, not to be Nostradamus, but we said that we thought that was the best thing that the Panthers could do right now, because
right.
He's a guy who knows the building, knows the personnel, knows the owner. It's the most seamless transition they can have right now. It's interesting that he comes in and starts to fire people, which, again, creates, even more vacuums inside the organization. But obviously he feels like he's gotten the power, even though he has the interim tag, to, make decisions on, who stays and who goes. So obviously this is not just to get us through the, the storm of the, opening of the season. I think this is a opportunity for him to step back in and, show Mr. Richardson that he's the guy to, steward the thing forward. So, it's interesting. It's going to really, really, really be interesting to me to see how this plays out, what his relationship with, Ron Rivera is going to be. I think what the locker room will be like now in with him, as the GM again. There's a lot of guys that go back on that football team to him and being drafted by him and all of that. So I think it's a positive for Carolina, really.
Jeff, I'm listening to a couple of American radio stations in the past week, and there was some belief that there was a very good relationship originally between Marty Herney and Jerry Richardson, and then obviously 2012 was a down year, and they parted ways. But there were a couple of things. First, Marty was kind of burned out and so needed that break anyway. And there was also belief that he kind of took the bullet for Ron Rivera. So if that's the case, he's going to have a very good working relationship with Ron Rivera, who probably appreciates what he did for him.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. And, I think those two factors, Neil, really did weigh into it. You got to understand, these jobs in professional football are so intense. They will suck the life out of you. And I think that the hours, the pressure, the time, the demands are so great that, oftentimes you see guys step away for a year or 2 years and come back with a renewed energy because they've had a chance to, to recharge their batteries a little bit. And I don't care if it's coaching, playing, or in the front office. These are highly, highly charged, highly competitive, very intense. That's the world we live in. Mm. And so to step away, I think sometimes is good. It gives you fresh perspective. You know, he's been doing radio. Mark Herring's been doing some radio, so he stayed in contact with the game. And then, as you say, you know, if he truly did take the bullet for, you know, Coach Rivera, then obviously there's got to be some mutual respect and goodwill there. And I think that's the key thing here, Neil, is what the environment inside that locker room is like now. And I think that may be the most positive thing.
Yeah, Greg Olsen has said he's not going to hold out now, even though he wants a new deal. So you wonder if that's part of that new culture and environment. One person who's not going anywhere, Jeff, we talked about Marty Herney and how long he stays with the Panthers, but one person not going anywhere is John Elway, who signed a new 5-year deal, keeps him as general manager and executive vice president of football operations for the Denver Broncos through the 2021 season. This is surely in the no-brainer category. Since 2011, the Broncos have had 2 Super Bowl appearances. They won a Super Bowl. They've had 5 division titles. He's won with Tim Tebow. He won with a Peyton Manning still at the top of his game. And he won with a Peyton Manning who was operating on fumes at the end of his career. So what do you think on this?
I think it's great for Denver. It's continuity, and continuity in pro football is rare. And when you can get it from the top of the organization down, then I think that's positive. I think, you know, he's done a great job. As you mentioned, all the quarterbacks he's, you know, won with. But, you know, he's won with some different coaches, too, and you know, different coaching styles. They've had a lot of really good assistants come through there and go, and he seems to be able to replenish the supply. Mm. And again, as I say all the time, I think so much of it is creating a culture and environment inside the building that's conducive to winning. And I think the Broncos have had that since Elway's been in charge.
Jeff, I want to move on. Just a couple more bits of news, then we'll get to the chat about training camp. But I see Robert Griffin III is going to have a workout with the LA Chargers. And I think whenever there's a workout like this, especially quarterbacks that are similar in terms of style and in terms of physical skills, it raises that question again about why Colin Kaepernick is not really receiving any looks around the NFL. And I'll just give you their numbers from the 2016 season. So RG3 was banged up and hurt a lot with the Cleveland Browns. Just 886 passing yards, 2 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. He had a rating of 72.5. Kaepernick, 2,241 yards, 16 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, and a rating of 90.7. Jeff's over the summer, I've seen John Mara, the owner of the New York Giants, allude to the kneeling down during the national anthems. I know that Michael Bidwell, the owner of the Arizona Cardinals, mentioned the same thing when I spent time with him this year. I saw Alex Boone, the Vikings offensive lineman, a former teammate of Kaepernick's, who said, "We would have had words if I'd still been in San Francisco. We'd have had words on the sideline." Is Kaepernick being blackballed by the NFL now, Jeff? What's your thoughts?
Well, I think the more and more you look at it, and you know, this has kind of been a hot topic even in our locker room. You know, right. The guys talk about it, and you know, because they're all pro athletes. Some of them played with Cap in the NFL and played against him in the NFL. And I think the general consensus amongst the players certainly is that, yeah, he is, and that his stance was so out there, if you will, and the media grabbed it and made it even more of a issue, that teams just are saying, hey, we'd rather give a workout to a guy who really – since his rookie year has there's nothing that he's done on the field that warrants, you know, an opportunity as opposed to a guy that, you know, you went through the numbers, and the numbers don't lie. But also, you know, people are making decisions about what they want in their locker room and what they want on their football team, and it's all of it. It's you know, when you the Cowboys just did it yesterday. I mean, Lucky Whitehead gets involved in some crazy deal, and the Cowboys just flat cut it. And so, because you're always making a decision about what it is that you want on your team, what kind of personality you want your team to have, what kind of locker room you want your team to have, what kind of, you know, what you want your players to reflect in terms of, you know, your organization. And I think Colin's stance was so controversial that, you know, there's no way, you know, if you just go on football ability, here's a guy that took a team to a Super Bowl. Now, again, he didn't win, but he's one pass away from winning a Super Bowl, and he can't find work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Jeff, that I'm not his biggest fan or haven't been, but when you look at those numbers, 90.7 rating, 16 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, he's still a running threat. You can't tell me he's not one of the best 96 quarterbacks in the NFL and gets a job somewhere as a third string. So there's something to it. And I wonder now, you know, we're almost a year on from when he took that action in the preseason, and what he was protesting about was worthy and was right and just. And you wonder if he could do it again, if he would, I don't know, pull his shirt up after a touchdown and show some writing and take a fine from the NFL that way, or pay for TV advertising and get his message across, or have a rant on Twitter, because this was so divisive. And we don't kind of have that culture here in the UK the same way, but you don't disrespect the American flag and the anthem, because it's an immediate tie to all of the kind of military and what people sacrifice, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that is the thing that hit a nerve that is so deep in you know, American culture. And you know, when you see all the things going on around the world, you know, that we've been in a battle since 9/11 with you know, with that whole deal, and all the people that have served and lost their lives and lost their limbs, and you know, I don't talk to him, you know, about these topics, but I'm sure he didn't mean it as a disrespectful act to the military. But the reality of it is that's how it was perceived. And once it was perceived that way, then the media fanned the flames, and you know, this is the final outcome. And here's a guy that should be, as you've mentioned, one of the top 96 quarterbacks. He's probably one of the top 36 quarterbacks. And you know, he should be working right now, but he's not, because you know, that stance and that particular act was so controversial and so divisive that, you know, the owners and, you know, people who make those final decisions just said, I'm not on my team.
Yeah, it's going to be on a case-by-case basis. And actually, you know, when I talked to Michael Bidwell, Jeff, we had just had a long conversation about how much Pat Tillman meant to the Arizona Cardinals. So you can see right there, you know, Pat Tillman made the ultimate sacrifice for America. You know, and that's going to not sit well what Kaepernick did with fans in Arizona. So there's one team straight off the list. I mean, and that's how it goes around the league from case to case.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but it's, you know, it's the facts and it's the way. I don't know. Again, I'd be really curious to find out or to talk to him and see if he had any idea before he knelt what that taking a knee was going to, the impact that taking that knee was going to have.
Yeah. I don't know if it was as far reaching or as grave as it's turned out to be, if he even was aware of that. I just mentioned about Kaepernick and maybe he could have addressed his issues on social media and with a Twitter rant. And that's kind of timely, Jeff, me mentioning that, because Tamba Ali, the outside linebacker, pass rusher for the Kansas City Chiefs, went off on a Twitter rant last week saying that he'd only played 7 snaps in the playoff loss to Pittsburgh. He was quoted as saying, "Am I needed in Kansas City anymore?" Andy Reid has responded and said, "Let's not do this through social media." And I wanted to tie it all kind of in together, because I saw as well that Tampa Bay Buccaneers defensive tackle Gerald McCoy was ranting and raving on the eve of training camp. Didn't really mention what he was ranting about, but he's taken to social media and has expressed his displeasure. And then I saw Antonio Brown has been kind of putting the pressure on Le'Veon Bell and saying, come on, we need you committed to the cause. Let's just have a chat about that, Jeff, because social media is a great thing for the fans. What about for you coaches when you're trying to deal with your players?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. Inside the organization, every organization, ours all the way to the New England Patriots, you have people who monitor your players' social media accounts and verify them. And I mean, it's a full-time job for the people in public relations and information. Because here's the thing, and I've heard numerous coaches in you know their meetings with their players say, just take a breath before you send. Right. Mm-hmm. Take a breath. Read it again before you send. What? So you know, whether it's Antonio Brown coming out and saying we need you to put that doesn't just put pressure on Le'Veon Bell. That puts pressure on the organization, and it puts pressure. You know, now the fans accentuate and multiply that pressure on. And those things can be divisive. Those things can be divisive in your locker room. Obviously, you know, you mentioned McCoy and Tom Bahali, and you know, like Andy Reid said, the media is not the place, or social media particularly is not the place to vent your frustration, or you know, in his case, you know, am I needed? Do you know that's not the place. That's not productive. It's not in any way conducive to, you know, having a great team environment, because it's on the eve of training camp, particularly. You know, I mean, it's just like the worst thing you could have.
It's like someone's only just told him, Jeff, that he had played 7 snaps. It's like he didn't realize that in January.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, this thing, he could have, and there's so many better ways to handle it. You know, again, go into Andy's office. I'm sure Andy Reid is more than happy to sit down with Tom Bahali and talk about, you know, how that played out in the playoffs, or, you know, it's, you know, go into Bobby's office and Bobby Sutton, the defensive coordinator, go into Bobby's office. I mean, I know Bobby's a good guy. He's not going to sugarcoat it, and he's not going to, you know, tell you anything but the truth. I'm sure there was a reason for it. And you know, but sometimes it's hardest for the players to accept those kinds of things. And, you know, in today's NFL, the players have a much louder and stronger voice than they've ever had because of social media.
But Jeff, I mean, you can maybe tell us with your experience as well. It's better to try and encourage them to come in and knock on your door. But the more they have, and this is not just an NFL player thing, this is a kind of generational thing. Everyone's got a phone attached to their hands, and everyone's sending messages and emails to each other when they're 6 feet away from each other in offices. I wonder if they don't always feel comfortable coming and chatting, but that would be the way to do it because it's so much less public. But then there's stories of when the Vikings were interviewing Cordarrelle Patterson before the draft and he couldn't get off his phone. He's just sitting there playing on his phone the whole time. It's a generation that kind of talks to each other in different ways, but you guys as coaches, you want them to still knock on your door, don't you?
Yeah, and you know what, Neil? It's interesting because you see it all the time. And you know, we have a policy that players don't bring their cell phones into meetings. Well, some of them, when they give up their cell phone, it's like all of a sudden they've lost a limb. I mean, it's amazing how attached to that thing that they are. And I saw a study done by a psychiatrist in Australia about the number of times that young people today look at their phone during the course of a day, and how the phone and that buzz that you get when you get a message or you get a like on Twitter or whatever has become almost an addictive response for you know, this generation of people. And again, I really, really, really think that's something that we have to work on as, you know, in pro football. That I think that's something we have to work on all the time about, hey, let's have a face-to-face, eye-to-eye, sit-down relationship, because that is very rare in these young people's lives today because of, you know, their phone has become their, you know, if you will, their eyes and their ears.
Jeff, I saw a great stat yesterday where the NFL in New York researched the fans and how they watched the games last year and how they are trying to make the game more entertaining. And there was a wonderful statistic talking about young fans. So fans who do spend a lot of time on their phones. And this will apply to your players, so you can take this into the meeting room. Apparently, young fans now have an 8-second attention span. And do you know that a goldfish has an attention span of 9 seconds?
Well, that would explain an awful lot, Neil.
So you got to deliver your message in 8-second chunks.
Oh, you know what? That is so amazing. And you know what's interesting is if you think about our broadcasts when we broadcast games on Sky, that how there is a the ongoing Twitter, even though the fans are sitting there watching the games, watching our broadcast on television, they still want the Twitter feedback. They right. want, you know, the little comments that we make yeah. on Twitter as we go through the game.
Everyone's watching with a second device. They've got a second device on like, the go.
Yeah, in the old days, you sat and watched the game with your friends. Now you sit and watch it with your phone.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's just it's the change. It's the times that we're in. And, you know, you have to adapt to it to a certain extent. But at some point, again, you know, you don't have a cell phone in the, I don't think anyway, it's so far in the huddle or in, you know, third and eight, and you got to stop somebody. You have to be able to communicate. And that's, you know, kind of a lost art with these young kids.
They're relaxing the touchdown celebrations rules, Jeff. There'll be a cell phone in the huddle before we know it. Be like Joe Moore again, you know?
You wait, here we go, that's right.
All right, let's talk training camps then. So, actually, Jeff, I'm off this Friday. I fly out to Phoenix, Arizona. Shall I give you another stat?
Give me it.
I'm going to do 11 flights in 9 days. So I'm seeing 8 teams in 8 straight days. I'm going to cover 16,780 miles. And I'm going to start with Bruce Arians and the Arizona Cardinals. And I wanted to start there, Jeff, as we talk about training camp, because this is a time when you, as coaches, you need to get players ready, but you also need to keep them healthy, and you want to get to opening weekend with your roster intact and everyone ready to go. But Bruce Arians has said, and this is an interesting quote to get us chatting about training camp, he said, "We're going to hit in camp more than we have in the past. That's the one thing I decided. Tackling is a lost art. It's really bad in college and it's gotten pitiful in the NFL. We're going to tackle more in camp and roll the dice that we're not going to get anybody hurt." So he attributes, last year he did very little tackling in camp. He said that he thought he had a veteran team, he didn't need it. And then they lost 3 of their first 4 games. This is a relatively old school reversal for one of the most prominent coaches in the NFL.
Yeah, it is, and it's really, really, really a reversal in terms of the trend in pro football today. You know, I feel exactly what he's saying, because we went through the same thing. You know, you don't tackle anybody, and then it's even worse for us because, you know, the NFL, you have 16 games and 4 preseason games. We have 18 regular season games, but only 2 preseason games.
Right.
So our training camp is much shorter. And you only have those two training camp games to get your guys ready to play. Well, you don't want to play your veterans because you're afraid of getting them hurt. Then they come out and they play like rookies early in the year, and we're still in, you know, feeling the hangover of that. And you know, tackling is the hardest thing to practice because you can't take players to the ground consistently. Now, we've done everything, and every NFL team is the same thing. We've got the mobile dummies that can run 4.7 that you can tackle. We've got the big, looks like a gigantic donut that you roll out there that you can tackle. I mean, we've done everything we possibly can, but there's no substitute for actually tackling another human being. I mean, I understand his frustration, but again, with that comes the risk of guys getting hurt. And you know, I think he's at the point where he recognizes that for them to get over the hump, they have to come out quicker early in the year. Obviously, the 1-3 start wasn't, you know, they couldn't fight their way through that. Mm. And, you know, this is a big, big, big year for the Cardinals, in my opinion, because, you know, Carson's not getting any younger. Fitzpatrick's not getting any younger. And you know, their window's starting to close a little bit. So I think this is a huge year, and I think that's reflective in what Bruce is doing.
Yeah, I think that was the point I was going to make, Jeff, is you're probably willing to roll the dice when, as a coach, you've already alluded to the fact you've had some health issues. You might be in your last year, as you said, Larry Fitzgerald, Carson Palmer, all kind of, you know, keeping the band together. That band is only going to be together for another year, it probably really is another year. So you might want to just go all in and give it a go.
I think so, and I think that's a little bit Bruce's personality too. I mean, he's not afraid. He's not afraid to, you know, think outside the box a little bit, and you know, that's the way he attacks his play calling, and you know, that's the way they play defense, and you know, so it's you know, in step with what, you know, they do. And I think that he recognizes it for them to, like I said, to get over the hump and get, you know, get to where they want to be, which is ultimately the Super Bowl. They can't stand on the status quo.
No. I guess in Washington, we talked a bit about Carolina, but this is a great time for Washington and the Carolina Panthers because they can finally just play football, Jeff. You know, it's like, let's just start talking about how our team is shaping up rather than, you know, an off-season of dysfunction or perceived dysfunction.
Yeah, and, you know, it's all over the place. I mean, you know, I saw Jason's, his first interviews, from Cowboy camp. You know, the Cowboys and the Cardinals are already going because they play. Yeah, they've got the Hall of Fame game. You know, what's he talking about? He's not talking about, whether Dak's going to, have sophomore slump or, what's his next step as a development as a player. It's about, it's about Lucky Whitehead and cutting him. And, the owner's talking about, Ezekiel Elliott and how, he's defending his player, which he should do, which he has to do in the media. But, again, those are things that are – that's not what you want to be talking about as you open training camp. It's about the excitement of, getting Zach Martin – redone, which is one of the things they're trying to do right now. It's about, taking a next step as a young quarterback, what his thing will be now that it's his team and Tony Romo's no longer over his shoulder. That's the kind of stuff you want to be talking about as you go into training camp, not about some guy getting arrested off the field or a guy that's got a pending, court deal or, any of those distractions that, we as coaches hate so much.
Jeff, I don't think we should kind of dwell on specifics because a lot of investigation things are still going on with Ezekiel Elliott. But as a coach, would you be concerned that there seems to be a number of different things of varying degrees of seriousness, but Zeke keeps making headlines for the wrong reasons?
Yep. And you're exactly right. I mean, here's a guy that, is so critical to your success. And for whatever reason, this kind of cloud keeps following him around. And I know they live under a microscope, right? Mm-hmm. It's a different world than other people live in. But the reality of it is that's your world. And these clouds are created, by behaviors that, not healthy for your career, not healthy for your football team, not healthy for your teammates. And, that's got to be a concern for any Cowboy fan or anybody in the Cowboy organization because this is a guy you want doing the right things, not, constantly defending him for things that he may have done wrong.
You're right. They do live in a spotlight, but sometimes players cry out for the spotlight to be shined on them, especially if you turn up on opening night of the draft wearing a shirt that's cut off above the stomach.
All those things, Neil. all of those things. I'm just telling you, all those things factor into it. And again, when you talked about Cordell Patterson not being able to get off his phone during an interview at the combine, I mean, if you draft that kid, that's what you're getting. And obviously if he doesn't get it that these are people that I mean, if a guy doesn't get it to that point or doesn't get it to the point you show up at the draft with your stomach hanging out, six pack or not. I mean, that's just stuff that those are red flags. I'm just telling you. And almost 100% of the time, those things are going to come back and manifest themselves in behaviors that are not conducive to winning.
Yeah, Jeff, I see that Andrew Luck and Cam Newton are going to kind of start training camp on the physically unable to perform list. Cam had that partially torn rotator cuff. Andrew Luck had a complete labrum repair. First of all, that's massive to watch the progress of both those guys. So integral to their team. So, chat about that on one part. But also, how do the other skill position players and how do you get the rest of your offense ready when you know you're going to kind of parachute in a different quarterback come opening day?
Well, the issue's more in terms of the timing and the chemistry between players. Now, obviously, in both of those cases, they're veterans who have been in the spotlight. They've been in the number one seat. They know the deal. They've got veteran receivers around them. So again, that part isn't the hard part. The hard part is getting that timing, that crispness that you want in your offense, in your passing game, and that will take them a little bit of time. Now, again, it's for and I've watched really closely Newton's you know, off-season progress, and I think they've done a great job of getting him everything he can do, his footwork, his reads, all of those things. You've seen him work on those things without throwing the ball. And now as he starts to continue to throw just little bits, I saw him, you know, a couple weeks ago, I saw him just throwing some, like, lobbing balls, right, to a trainer. Slowly but surely that'll come. The key thing to me is, Neil, don't rush him.
Right.
Because talking about shoulders, and that is shoulders and elbows to a quarterback, that's their livelihood. So the critical thing is don't get them out there before they want to be. And you know both guys and have interviewed both guys, and they're both highly competitive guys that are going to want to be out there, you know, tomorrow.
Sticking with quarterbacks, Jeff, and then we'll move on. Rookie quarterbacks, do any? We had this question actually. Michael Bennett was doing my job for me in the mailbag. He said, "Do we expect any rookie quarterbacks to win the starting job through training camp?" So last year we kind of had all eyes on Jared Goff, and then Carson Wentz became such a success in Philadelphia that they traded away Sam Bradford. Do we see, I don't know, DeShone Kizer at the Browns winning that? Is it Mitch Trubisky usurping Mike Glennon at the Bears? DeShone Watson at the Texans taking on Tom Savage or Patrick Mahomes? Maybe a bit early for him to take out Alex Smith. Any of those you expect to start come week one, Joe?
Well, right now, the football guy in me says no, but I think the guys that you mentioned when you talked about Kizer, Trubisky, and DeShone Watson are the three that have the best chance. Obviously, Kizer because of where, you know, Cleveland is right now in terms of their development. You know, Trubisky, you know, that was, you know, they drafted up, they went up to pick him. There'll be some pressure on Foxy to get him into preseason games. And if he does well in the preseason games, that'll, you know, that could be a controversial one. And then, you know, the deal with Watson is, you know, just how much he's been able to acclimate himself to the NFL game, and, you know, how deep into the playbook he is right now. All of those things we don't know until we see him in preseason. But obviously when you talk about just talent level, you know, he could make a push, I think, against Tom Savage in preseason. That's why, again, that's one of the wonderful things about preseason. You get an opportunity to see these kind of guys and where they're at and how they're developing and, you know, what their ceiling is.
One last overview, Jeff, as it comes to training camp. So I'm going to visit 8 teams. 6 of them will be at their regular practice sites. The only ones that won't be are the LA Rams and the Minnesota Vikings. Minnesota are preparing for their 52nd season at Mankato. Mankato, down about an hour and a half south of Minneapolis. But next year they're going to go to their new facility. I was just looking at the numbers. I haven't got them. I was looking this morning, but I didn't jot them down. But I think in 2000, 10 teams stayed at home and the rest of the NFL went away to training camp. This year it's going to be 22 of 32 will be at their home venue. Talk us through the pros and cons of being on the road or in your own facility.
Well, I tell you what, when in Kansas City, when I was there with Coach Vermeil in training camp in 2001, we were in Wisconsin. We were at Wisconsin River Falls, and Mankato was about 2 hours bus ride away from us. There was actually what they called the Cheese League. Saints were up in Wisconsin in training camp. The Bears were in Wisconsin for training camp. Obviously, the Packers were there. So the interactions were much easier to have. If you wanted to, you know, work a day where you went over and worked against another team, which is really, I think, really good because the players get, you know, Neil, it's so the monotony and the drudgery of training camp. And anytime you get a chance to compete against somebody else, it brings a little juice to camp. Well, you know, those things were much easier to do when you had 4 or 5 teams all in the state of Wisconsin for training camp. Now, as the facilities have, you know, what has become an arms race in facilities in the NFL because of the ability to sign free agents and all that, you know, Arizona used to have to go up to Flagstaff, which is where Northern Arizona University is, up in the mountains.
To get out of the heat.
Because, yeah, just to get out of the heat. Well, now they have an indoor facility so they can go indoors when, you know, when it's hot in the summer. And,
good.
You know, so it, in a lot of ways, it's better for the players and maybe for the organization, because always, obviously, when you've got your training camp where your fan base is, that helps you. However, you know, the Cowboys, they still go out to Thousand Oaks, and that's been something that they've done since the Tom Landry days to get out of that heat in Texas. So, you know, to me, I kind of enjoyed it when you went away, and I know as a coach you enjoyed it because it really, you know, it really gives you an opportunity to become a team. And the fans, it was cool because I can remember we would go from our dorm where we stayed, the players and coaches stayed, and it was about maybe a 20-minute walk over to the, you know, where the practice facility was, and the players would ride bikes, you know, and the little kids would, you know, carry their helmets, and it was really a time when the fans, you know, people would take vacations, if you can believe this one, people would take their vacations to go watch Chiefs training camp. And
oh,
they'd
yeah.
be in the stands. Yeah, they'd be in the stands every day. You see it as
I've
you go around.
I've seen it. Yeah,
no, going around the NFL.
I mean, I was in Kansas City. I forget where they are now. Where do they, is it? It was Wichita Falls. Is it there still? I'm not sure. But I was at the Chiefs training camp a couple of years ago, Jeff, and you could see for families it was a day out. It was the kids were there. There was a pit there. People had got picnics, and then this horrible storm rolled in 15 minutes into the start of practice. And of course, they don't mess about with the players, and it was straight inside, and that was day over for the fans. So I felt for them on that particular day. But generally, it's a great day, and you're right. People take time off work, they take vacations, and they make a real family event of it. I see what Dallas do with, you know, taking it out of the heat and humidity of Texas, and they go to Oxnard, and in a way, Jeff, they build themselves another fan base in California. And you know, I don't think it would hurt the Jags to come to London for 3 weeks in the summer.
No, I think I think it's a great idea. And you know, you like you say, the Cowboys are quote America's team. Well, one of the reasons they are is because they understand that pushing their brand is really important, and pushing their brand not only in, you know, in Dallas, but pushing their brand nationally. You know, there was a time when I was in Dallas, and the Cowboys would go to San Antonio in to practice indoors in the San Antonio Dome. Well, what they found out was that wasn't very conducive to the players' health, and so they moved back to be on the grass, which is much more forgiving on your legs. And, you know, again, that's the biggest thing in training camp is, you know, do the mental work, do the physical work, but try and save their legs as much as you can. And I think being on the grass in Thousand Oaks is you know, another benefit that you get. As, you know, again, same thing. When we're in River Falls, at Wisconsin River Falls, grass practice fields. And one of the coolest things I can remember about that is I walk into they had a big field house where we had our training room and all that stuff, and I walked in and I see this old guy laying on the porta pit where the high jumpers jump into, and he's playing with his grandkids. It's like three grandkids, and he's throwing them up in the air and letting them land on the porta pit. and it was Lamar Hunt, the owner of the team. And I said, this is an NFL moment right here. Here's a guy that, the trophy's named after in the AFC Championship game. And he's over in training camp throwing his grandkids around the porta pit. It was pretty cool.
That is cool. That is a cool story. Let's take some questions in the mailbag to finish off this week then. Let's start with John Kirkup. Who on the subject of training camp says, are the New York Jets even bothering to have one? He's a depressed Jets fan, Jeff. It does feel like they've decided to take their lumps with all the kind of cleaning of house that they've done. The Jets are in for a kind of a rough year. But then you ask the players, you know, and you talk to the players, and obviously some of them are so proud and they give up too much to just say they're giving up the season. I know Sheldon Richardson was very outspoken about that, and Muhammad Wilkerson as well.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting because we were talking about the optimism and that goes through your team as you go into training camp. And then I thought about the Jets, and I thought, well, for most teams, if you're a Jets fan, you got to say, oh, boy, this is going to be one of those years. But, you know, the players, I'll tell you something, players are fiercely competitive, and they have tremendous pride. You know, they're to think that they're going to tank it to get a better draft pick or whatever, you know, I think that's kind of silly. But, you know, the reality of it is every team goes through kind of like, a rebuild, really. Right. I mean, it's the nature of the business. We're going through it right now. We're starting six rookies on defense. Well, you know, that's tough to play that way. But it's what you have to do to come out the other end better.
Right.
And, you know, you have to grow through. You have to go through the painful part of it. And I think if you look at every organization in the last 15 or 20 years, with the exception of the Patriots somehow, they've all gone through. You know, it wasn't very long ago the Cowboys weren't very good.
Right.
It wasn't very long ago. Excuse me. You know, it wasn't very long ago. You know, you looked at the Packers and they look like they're going to be a dynasty. And then, you know, they've been to one Super Bowl, I think, in 9 years. So, you know, it's every team has to go through it. Every team, you know, lives with it. The Seahawks were horrible, and then they looked like they were going to be the next dynasty. So, again, it's just the nature of the business.
Yeah, and it can change quick as well. The 49ers were one of the powerhouses of the NFL not so long ago. Now we're talking about them starting from scratch under Kyle Shanahan. Let's take this question from Joe Lee, who says, how do you think the Indianapolis Colts can do this year with new defenders and a healthy Andrew Luck? We kind of talked about Andrew in terms of his health, Jeff. It's been an ongoing thing for a couple of seasons now because he's been so banged up behind that offensive line. They did add Ryan Kelly at center last year, which kind of solidified the middle, but clearly there's something on the line that needs to still be fixed. But they did add some defenders and maybe a little bit of muscle with nose tackle Jonathan Hankins, Margus Hunt at defensive tackle. Then you've got some pass rushers in Barcavius Mingo, Jabal Sheard, John Simon, Sean Spence was added on inside linebacker. I mean, every kind of free agent addition that Chris Ballard made was a sort of under-the-radar defensive signing. I mean, how do you think the Colts can do this season?
Well, I think, you know, with the Colts, it's always the same questions, and you hit on it. Number one, is the offensive line going to be able to keep the quarterback on his feet?
Yeah.
And if they can, obviously, Luck's shown that he is, you know, an elite-level quarterback. Defensively, I think Chris, and I've known Chris Ballard since those Kansas City days. He's a really, really, really good personnel guy, and he's gone out and kind of bargain basement shopped, if you will. Because you look at a Margus Hunt, who was, I think, a third or second round draft choice by Cincinnati, but never really could crack that lineup because they got so many good D linemen. But he's a big, strong guy. He's added toughness to the defense. I think he's added, as you said, muscle. They should be a more physical defense. You know, Jabal Sheard's a good pass rusher. Barcavius Mingo is one of those guys, Neil, that, you know, you're talking about a first round pick, that now this is his third team, and, you know, he's never, the lights never really come on for him. He's shown flashes, but, you know, he couldn't get it done in Cleveland, went to the Patriots, and then now he's with Indianapolis. So what I'm sure they're hoping for is that he can be a situational pass rusher for him, because he's, you know, he's so thin and so wispy as a defensive end or outside linebacker. But when you get him, the one thing the kid can do, and has demonstrated all the way, that what made him a first-round draft choice out of LSU, is ability to rush the passer. So if they hit on a couple of those guys, and, you know, you get some energy going on defense, and, you know, they can protect Andrew Luck, I think the Colts can win that division.
All right, let's take one more question. Callum Hammett asked, who is your Super Bowl pick? Not yet, Callum, that is too soon. let's take this one from Mitch Moth. So, at Mitch Moth, and we've woken up the fans in the AFC South today, Jeff, because he says, what's more likely, the Jags improve to 8-8 or the Tennessee Titans to 12-4? So, Jacksonville were 3-13 last year. Can they go to 8-8 or will Tennessee go from 9-7 to 12-4? Which is more likely and why?
You know what? I think the Jacksonville team is more likely. And I think that roster, when you look at that roster, that's certainly at least an 8-8 roster, you know, top to bottom.
Yeah.
I think Marone will bring a toughness, that they've lacked, frankly. I think that Coughlin, you know, will be a solid influence in that locker room and in that organization. I think there'll be a kind of a different demeanor, if you will, around that Jacksonville team. Now, obviously, I'm a big Mariota guy, and he's coming off an injury. That's a question. I think they've done some things to help themselves, but get to 12-4. 12-4 is tough to do in the National Football League. Let me just tell you that you got to be a really, really good team to go 12-4. So, I think 8-8 is more realistic for the Jaguars than 12-4 is for the Titans.
Jeff, I was just thinking as you said that about Doug Marrone and the kind of new regime that is in Jacksonville under Tom Coughlin. And, you know, I'm going to see this and try and get a gauge on this around the NFL. And I think it takes place when you go through one coach that has one style, you often find that you take a completely different turn the next time around. I think Sean McDermott in Buffalo is clearly not Rex Ryan. Jeff Fisher was very old school with the Rams, and now I'm going to get to chat and meet Sean McVay and kind of see the difference in coaching styles there. And then Gus was kind of everyone's best friend in Jacksonville, and I love Gus Bradley. I really did like that energy he brought, but Doug Marrone doesn't seem like a Gus Bradley kind of guy. In your experience, in all your years coaching, has that often been the case where you go from one kind of coach, well, then you take the polar opposite the next time?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's when you say you didn't get it done, you look at the reasons for not getting it done. You know, was it one side of the ball didn't perform? Well, if that's the case, you go get a guy who's, you know, versed on that side of the ball, right? If your offense wasn't getting it done, you go get an offensive guy. You know, and then beyond that, it's what kind of environment you want. I think one of the things that Jacksonville felt, I'm sure, was, hey, yeah, we competed and we hung together and we all, but we didn't tough out games that we needed to tough out. And so Marrone brings that. That's Doug's personality. Neil, you've known him since he was one of the nasty boys in NFL Europe for the London Monarchs, and that's his reputation. You know, one of our players here played for Doug and you know, speaks extremely highly of him. As a matter of fact, we had a conversation about him the other day, and says he's a no-nonsense, but you know where you're at all the time. He's not there to be your friend, but he's there to help you get better. And, you know, again, if the players will accept that from him, the fact that the only thing that matters is, you know, the bottom line is the bottom line, and we're here to help everybody get better, not to be your buddy, then I think, you know, they've got a chance. Because, they've started to put together a nice-looking roster in Jacksonville.
Jeff, one of the first things he did in Jacksonville was take the ping pong table out of the locker room. And I've walked through that locker room a number of times, and I've seen the guys after practice playing table tennis against each other. When you do those kind of things, do they really make a difference? Do they send, or is it about sending a message?
Well, I think it's more sending a message, to be real honest with you. And that, you know, again, his message, I'm sure, is, hey, this isn't a place for recreation. This is a place for work. And, you know, there's obviously many ways to do it. You know, you go to the Seahawks, and right in the middle of their meeting room, or in their team meeting room, is a basketball hoop on the wall. And they'll get up and shoot baskets in the middle of a meeting. I mean, that's Pete's way. And, you know, if you look at it, doesn't always work, and it doesn't always, you know, succeed. You know, what was the challenge about Pete in both New York and New England? Is, you know, he's too close to the players. He had a basketball hoop outside in New England. They used to go out and shoot baskets with the players. Well, you know, but it didn't win. So immediately the point is that's the problem. Well, he does it in Seattle, and all of a sudden shooting baskets is a great idea. So, you know, it just comes down to, you know, winning really. And then, you know, how you do it is less important than the fact that you do it.
Right. So there are many different ways to skin a cat, but you better win, right?
Yeah, that's the bottom line. I mean, you know, we say it all the time. We're in a high performance industry, and you know, it's the bottom line is the bottom line, and nobody wants to hear about how many rookies you're playing or how many guys you got injured or, you know, all, any of that stuff. The bottom line is the bottom line, and you sign up for it when you take a job in this business as a player or as a coach or anybody in administration.
All right, you're in a high-performance business, Jeff. That means you can't spend any more time talking to me, so we're going to let you go.
We better get performing. I may not be in the business.
That's all right, Jeff. You can come with me on the training camp trip. Don't worry. There's always a seat for you, mate. Always a seat for you.
Hey, give me a call from the road. I'm anxious to hear how those are going, and next week's going to be a great show.
Yes, I am. I'm going to, and we will do our podcast next week from, I don't know where I'll be in the States, but I know Jeff will be.
From airport.
Yeah, I'll be
from
in
airport,
an airport or a hotel. It won't be like by the side of the practice field, which would be really cool. But we will bring you inside the huddle next week. Until then, say goodbye to the good folks, Coach.
Aloha.